There are only two feelings, love and fear. There are only two languages, love and fear. There are only two activities, love and fear. Two motives, two frameworks, two results. Love and fear. Love and fear.
It's a very hard task for the preacher this Sunday to try and make some good news out of the gospel. That is, if you were paying attention. Here we have a state of the world which is in great turmoil, and then we have the attitude of different religions all at war with each other, and then we have this terrifying gospel. So Paul talks about the church being full of dissension and argument, and then Jesus comes up with this impossible demand. I was told when I was studying theology that the gospel can be summed up in three phrases. God gives everything to you. You ought to give everything to God. You can't. Now, it sounds very depressing after a while, but you remember, those of you who did your history in America, Jonathan Edwards' famous sermon, being in the hands of a wrathful God, the damned, it was like a spider being held over the fires of hell, and all that stopped the spider falling in was this one thread. Now that sounds terrible, but it's suggesting that there is nothing that's standing between us but the grace of God, that life is a gift, and that you can't sort of earn it or be better than other people. And the danger of religious people is beginning to be self-righteous and understand what it means to be under the grace of God. So we think of the state of the world and we listen to the readings and we're given really an impossible task. What we have actually are two principles that we find in the early church. One is that the world, you know, you've the phrase love makes the world go round. Well, this is a tougher one. It's sacrifice makes the world go round. And if you don't actually make something of yourself and live sacrificially, that is giving yourself away, then there has to be a cycle of bloody sacrifice in politics and in wars. And so don't sell yourself short, the gospel is saying, because what you do with your inner struggles really makes a difference. It really helps, because the second principle is the principle of the solidarity of the spiritual order. The mothers and fathers of the early church went out into the desert, and the desert was where they met God and where they fought with demons. Now this is a kind of mythology, a way of understanding things, but the great thing was that if somebody went out and fought with their own inner demons and triumphed, it couldn't go and bother anyone else. So your inner struggles aren't just a private trip. They really do make a difference to the commonwealth, to our being together. So take heart. I'm trying to end this sermon by some good news. And, you know, reading the gospel, it's so challenging that no one can live up to that. No one. And either one collapses in despair or one realizes that we are all living under grace. There is in the world a sort of joyless urgency, as someone says, and I came across a new word, a terrible way we make up language like this, but it was the word fragilization. Isn't it awful, isn't it? Fragilization. There is an amazing fragility about life, about being human, and learning to choose love over fear, learning to choose inner disarmament over bloody sacrifice in politics, in war, and learning to sort of tell the truth. And truth telling is tricky, how we tell the whole truth, because I don't want you to go away thinking grace is cheap. On the other hand, I want you to go away joyfully realizing that you're loved for who you are. And how do you get that balance? The Jesuits who taught me, some of them anyway, had a great phrase, truth lies in the interpretation. Do you get that? Truth lies in the interpretation. There is always a sort of two truths, and we can always make the truth sound something in our favor. And so we have to be careful, because you can say true things falsely. One of the early church fathers raged at the heretics, because he said that it's as if the heretics take, if you can imagine the head of Christ as a mosaic, lots of little stones, And he said that the heretics take all those stones, every little truth, and instead of making the head of Christ, they make the head of a fox. And so the danger of language is that you can go and hear a politician speak or a preacher, and all the words are right, you smell a rat. You know it's not quite right, because there isn't love there. There isn't love which conquers everything. And so don't sell yourself short. Your inner work is deeply important. It's called in psychology shadow work. You know the phrase. There's two more phrases. You'll know them well. Better to light a candle than curse the darkness. You know that? Better to light a candle than curse the darkness. There's another one, which is to light a candle is to cast a shadow. And you're doing your inner work and not blaming the world for everything or blaming your partner or blaming things. You're doing that inner work. It really does make a difference and really contributes to the peace and grace of the world. So don't sell yourself short. That's my message today. So to light a candle is to cast a shadow. Better to light a candle than curse the darkness. I remember seeing a great production in London of Shakespeare's Tempest. And those of you who know the Tempest, Prospero has been betrayed, and he lures all his enemies to the island. And he has a servant called Caliban, which is an anagram of cannibal. And at the end of the play, in the production I saw, Prospero goes up to Caliban and puts his cloak around Caliban and says, "This thing of darkness, I acknowledge mine." And acknowledging one's own shadow, one's own darkness, one's own dark side, means that, you know, like the struggle with demons in the desert story, once that has been conquered, it can't go and bother anyone else. What we do have, though, is a cycle of blame. And that sacrifice, the inner sacrifice, turns into a political or military sacrifice where we want to do people in. And you could ask yourself, you know, ask yourself, for the world would be a better place if we could get rid of all the... And you fill in the gap. There's always a group of people I'd like to get rid of. And having to put up with a fractious and difficult world and doing our own inner work is very, very important. So, what they called it in the Middle Ages was you're enrolling in the school of love, and that you do make a difference. As W.H. Auden says in the great poem, we must love one another or die, and choose that cycle of joy rather than the cycle of blood. One of my tests of people's beliefs or orthodoxy is to ask them, if you were, or think about this, if you were in charge, would I be safe? You know what I'm saying? If you were in charge, would there be room for me? If the answer is yes, you and I can fight about anything you like. We can have a really serious argument, not having to agree with each other. It's not all reading from the same page all the time, but not wishing to destroy the other. If you were in charge, would I be safe? I read this morning a little bit from Steinbeck's Tortilla Flat. He said, the prayers of the millions, how they fight and destroy each other on their way to the throne of God. Arguing about each other. My God's bigger than your God. My God's better than your God. And so we have a big task to do that inner work and understand the power of what you do. You matter in that sense. There is that curse of ideology, that longing for certainty, and not being willing to understand that we don't get everything all at once, that the conversation is important. A friend of mine translates the opening of St. John's Gospel, the fourth Gospel, in the beginning was the conversation. And that conversation was with God, and that conversation entered into our flesh. So if you can put up with it, no one has the last word. No one. Because I can say something, you say, but. And so the conversation goes on, whether you're, whatever party you belong to, whatever your politics, whatever your views of life, there's always an openness there which can be very disturbing. And one of the things that revolutionaries want to do is close down the conversation. I'll just give you one example. Lenin. didn't think you'd get Lenin at St. Bart's on a Sunday. He was the master manipulator of facts, the shadow of communism, which was supposed to usher in a new era for the human family. And it was through the sacrifice of others. There was a declaration, the Declaration of the Rights of Toiling and Exploited People. It was promulgated in 1918, and the text identified former people. Can you imagine that? Would you like to be a former person? A former human being? If you're a former human being, we can do away with you. Because you're in the way of ushering in a new humanity, a new way of being in the world. And they were not quite human. Since they were former people, they could be disposed of, slaughtered. They were people of the old regime, and therefore were deficient in humanity. And the lack became an excuse for terror. It was a similar thing in 1794 in Paris. Lenin and his followers believed that some human groups had to be destroyed in order to realize the potential of humanity. And many found themselves bearing the stigma of being a former person. Imagine being looked at as someone who represented a humanity that had its day. And it's very scary because you can think a little bit more recently. There were those who admired Hitler and Mussolini in the 1930s. Mussolini was spoken well of by Will Rogers, Thomas Edison, and Andrew Mellon. If ever the country needed a Mussolini, it needs one now, said a senator from Pennsylvania. And Walter Lippmann thought we needed a mild dictatorship in 1933, and told FDR so. So this spirit is alive still, and we have to be careful that we don't sort of spread that and be willing to do that inner sacrifice. So, politicians take note of the story you're pushing in the name of truth. We are sort of betrothed to each other. I love that part in the 1662 prayer book in the marriage service. And thereto I plight thee my troth. Truth and troth. It's a kind of commitment to each other, to reverence each other. So, it's the life of grace we're about, not moral superiority, where we are on top and everyone else is wrong. So let me finish with good old Emily Dickinson. Tell all the truth, but tell it slant. Success in circuit lies, too bright for our infirm delight. The truth, superb surprises, lightning to the children eased with explanation kind. The truth must dazzle gradually, or every man is blind. And that's what the tradition says. There is in God a deep but dazzling darkness. The mystery of choosing love over fear as we move through life, not knowing everything, but trying to love, trying to give ourselves away, trying to be part of a moral and loving sacrifice rather than a bloody one. And you are never more truly yourself when you're gathered at this altar, gathered around this table, because there are only two feelings, love and fear. And you can make a difference by choosing daily, painfully, joyfully, love over fear. And maybe this sorry and wonderful world will find peace. Amen.